American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Thursday, September 22nd, 2005. And you guessed it, this would be Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit Rep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, and you can currently get to my live journal by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WMI Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, OspreyRadio.info, and Extreme Radio Tampa. As well, you can hear us on SRN1, and you can hear us anywhere that anyone is distributing this broadcast for free, because everyone is allowed to distribute this broadcast for free and in any way that they see fit. Let's get right off the top and get straight into some feedback. Dear Sean, actually, you know what? Why is that straight in already in your sort yourself out section? I think that should be further down. I seem to have moved it up a little bit higher than I normally started to. Don't you hate that when I have to edit the show while I'm recording the show? That's because, well, you know, we're all trying to do the best we can with what we got over here. But that's okay. That's okay. Everything's going to work out just fine. That's the beauty of hotkeying and delaying with your method of speech. Now, let's get back to the feedback. Dear Sean, in regards to the fourth way cult you discussed on Tuesday. Now, there was a gentleman who wrote in a wonderful letter about a friend of his who was going to be named Gecko, who was involved with this fourth way cult. Now, I never have heard of the fourth way cult. I mean, I probably got in a couple books here, but I myself have no knowledge of them. Well, he goes on to say here that I used to be highly interested in this stuff. I read the original text written by Utpetsky and Gurdjieff. Nice name, Gurdjieff. I never made contact with a quote-unquote school and tried my best to learn on my own. I knew no one interested in the fourth way, so I have no first-hand experiences with the cult. After the death of the founders of the school, everything split up, and there's about a million variations in small groups. So it's your classic one big one shatters into a bunch of small ones. What does that remind me of? They are not organized. Again, what does that remind me of? They are not a single cult. There are different groups with different aims, ideas, and extremities. If this chick the guy is talking about is involved in the Fellowship of Friends, she should leave. The group has been corrupt from the top, involving allegations of sexual abuse. There is also white power groups involved with Fourth Way as well. Great. If you could send me a list of those, that'd be interesting to know. Just wanted to establish that the Fourth Way thing is not a single unified cult. Fourth Way books definitely paved the way for a cult setup. I have to say it's a bad situation to be in. While I am sure that there are many cults using the Fourth Way philosophy in order to take advantage of people, there is no single power structure which makes it easier to stop. There's no single power structure which may make it easier to stop. Actually, it's harder to stop if there is no set main power structure. This is why, you know, we're having so many problems with insurgents in Iraq, because they're all like little cells. You have to get each and every one, little one of them. What the Fourth Way does is shows exactly how full of shit everyone is. It's supposed to create this intense desire in students to learn more about the cult and escape the follies of man. This is the basic premise underlying the cult. It totes such phrases as, man is unable to do, and the typical, man does not know himself. I avoid the cult because of intense feelings of how hopeless the human situation is was not stated by some of the extreme premises of the Fourth Way ideas. By shifting the Fourth Way into philosophy and separating it from school/cult, I never got into this thing. That is my advice for this guy if he wants to help this chick. Try to push away her understanding of the original text from the activities of this school. This will not destroy her belief system, but it will allow her to see the folly of the social structure of this cult, which, if it is indeed, there is a folly. And that's from El Chero. Now, I gotta say that, again, you know, if this chick is of legal age, you really can't do too much about it, because it is her choice, other than try to be there for her, but tread lightly there, buddy. You never know where you might wind up with some crap like this. It's kind of nasty. No two ways about it. Now, on to sort yourself out. This is the one I was talking about before. Dear Sean, in searching for employment, always good to have money, this humble wog found himself in a position of working for the local government. Again, no big problem. My initial idea behind obtaining this job was to be the helpful hand in a sea of oppression. After 6 months of doing the job, I found things to be very different. It's my job. This is a great job. You ready for this one? It's my job to enforce city policy in relation to paying utility bills. It's my job that people pay up. If they don't, I get the esteemed honor of telling them their electricity and water will be shut off until all bills are paid. As much as I have strived to help the little guy, it's becoming harder and harder to go home with a clear conscience. Do I stick with a job which only allows me to stretch rules to help my fellow man half the time, which will make me sick to the stomach the rest, or do I search for the meaningful employment? Sorry for the long email. Anonymous. Well, it's kind of like this. Okay, first of all, you have the ability to stretch the rules half the time. There's a lot of people who don't get the power to stretch the rules any of the time. Now, I would say that you're unhappy with this job, so you should seek more meaningful employment where you'll be happy. That's first and foremost. But, I mean, let's not mince any words here. You got the job because you needed to make money. And the people are not being oppressed because of their political values. They're being oppressed because they're not paying their bills. Now, granted, they're not paying their bills for a variety of reasons, none of which you know. But the bottom line is, they're paying for a service. They stop paying for the service. Therefore, the service stops. You see what I mean? Like, that's pretty straightforward there. I don't really, like, of course they're going to be whining and crying at you and all the rest of it, but the bottom line is that they're not paying for a service. It's like you don't go to a video store and rent a video every day and then, you know, all of a sudden have no money, expect to show up at the video store and take home a video. You might, if the owner of the video store can pull that off and it's his power to do that and blah, 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 blah. But the thing is here, is that you're able to actually help people half the time, and that's not a small factor. So, you know, although, yes, definitely you're unhappy and you want to seek more meaningful employment, bear in mind that you are actually doing some good where you're at. Now, I actually worked in collections for a little while. A lot of people don't know that, but I worked in collections collecting people's, you know, money from overdue bills and debt and all the rest of it. And that was a soul-crushing job, let me tell you. Like, that was just bad. I only did that job for about 4 days. Couldn't keep it up more than that. But within that 4 days, I was the only collections officer, if you want to call him that, who was ever able to get a thank you letter sent in with a check. Because I was so goddamn nice on the phone. I just didn't yell at people. There was all kinds of guys. You know how these collection guys are. Oh, you deadbeat, you loser. And you'd hear these guys fucking wigging out all over the office. These guys be losing their fucking minds. And everybody in there was kind of a scumbag. You know what I mean? It kind of had that really heavy scumbag vibe in your workplace. I don't know if you've ever had to feel that, but trust me, it's out there. And when you're around that all the time, man, that's just not positive. So if there's other stuff going on there as well, I mean, you might want to look into that because there's no sense in you burning yourself out for some bullshit job that you fucking hate to begin with. So that's just, you know, my own personal sort of take on that. Now, dear Sean, I remember, this is my opinion piece here because, you know, the rest of the time I'm totally unbiased. Dear Sean, I remember hearing you mention in the past your involvement with cadets during your youth. That's kind of frightening how much people know about me. I'm curious as to what your experience was like with the cadet corps in general. Also, if you ever attended the summer camp at Vernon, B.C. I did, in fact, attend summer camp in Vernon, B.C. I can't tell you what year that was, though. It was a while back. And funny enough, the guy I was involved... Like, when I was there, I went to that summer camp, and there was a dude who I was at the camp with who was part of my company who wound up being in the same battery, in the same regiment I was, you know, in the middle of the country, which is kind of funny. Now, you got to bear in mind, what's my opinion of the cadets? Well, you got to bear in mind, you got to look at their own cadets, what their one of their major primary drives is for recruiting. I mean, that's what they do. They take kids, they teach them about, power structure and the rank of the military and all that kind of jazz, and they recruit kids that way. So what is my opinion of the cadets? It would probably be the same opinion as it is of the military. It's a good idea if, you know, you got all your ducks in a row. But if it's not something that you're into, then, you know, it's, you know, I liked my time in the cadets. Matter of fact, I'll go so far as to say my time in the cadets was more rewarding than anything else I've ever done with any kind of military. I mean, I did more cool shit in cadet. Well, no, that's not true. But I'll tell you, the people and everybody I met, cadets, were really, really nice, as opposed to a lot of the people who I met in the Reg Force Army. Now, a lot of people have asked me in Canada what I think the views are in joining the Canadian Army, and I tell everybody the same thing. Don't join the Reg Force, join the militia. Join the reserves, get all the training, and then go Reg Force afterwards. And everyone goes, no, I don't want to join the reserves, I want to join the real Army. Well, there's no difference between the reserves and the regular force. When you're overseas, you get more tours, more promotions, more money in the militia. That's how it works. You know, I don't know how it is in the States with the reserves in the States. I don't know any reservists in the States, but, you know, so I can't make a statement there. But I'll tell you, I will tell you that if there's a lot of people in Canada who are interested in this kind of a thing versus cadets, versus the reserves and all that kind of jazz, and you're 17 or whatever, you want to give the Army a go, don't join Reg Force, because you can't quit Reg Force. You can quit the reserves. You can try it, see if you like it, and then walk away. And I think that the Army should be that way anyway, to be honest with you. And people go, well, if that was the case, no one would go to war. And I think that's wrong. I think there'd be a lot of people who'd be willing to go and fight. It's just a matter of making sure that you have the right people who should be there. I can't remember where this was from, which is kind of pointless for me to mention it, but there was a famous battle where a general said that, you know, if a man does not wish to be in this battle, let him give him horse and give him money to get him the hell away from us, because we don't want his kind corrupting the purpose of this battle and the honor that will be bestowed upon us and all this other kind of good, you know, Viking sort of shit. Now, that sort of mentality is what the Army should be made of, instead of, you know, this hardcore kind of boys club, which has sort of evolved into being. And that's unfortunate, but, you know, so going full circle here, what was my experience with my time with cadets? Yeah, it was a pretty good time, I'd have to say, but I did find it to be slightly misleading as compared with my experience in the regular armed forces. Now, in Reach Back Paranoia from December 4th, 2003, you ready for this one? It was found by Sergeant Tibbs, but this is wild. Now, do you remember that I was talking about how you could take pictures with cameras remotely? Well, it seems that that technology has been around for a while, but nobody's really talking about it. So this is a really old article where it states, this is wild. Do you know you dial your own cell phone to hear it when you ring, when you can't remember where you put it? Well, this is even better. As long as your lens is not face down, an app exists for the Nokia Series 60 handsets, which remotely takes a picture, called MMS Can for Series 60. Just send the command SMS/, a bunch of other letters, and the twinkling of an eye, it takes a photo and sends it back via MMS or via email. An email address must be saved in the contract that sends the SMS. Hopefully, that ceiling will look familiar. Not to mention, this could lead to all kinds of interesting possibilities. Propping up your camera phone somewhere strategic and remotely taking a picture in sort of a blind, random way. Well, isn't that interesting? Isn't that just keen that this technology has been floating around? You can bet they didn't disable that. So that is still going on. It'd be interesting if someone could get me more information on how to take remote photographs with camera phones. I'd really enjoy to see more on that particular issue. Now, let's get straight into the Mud Hut news sent to me by Phoenix. Lovely and beautiful Phoenix. Lenore Durkee, a retired biology professor, was volunteering. Okay, so we have a retired, so she's a little older. Okay, a little older. She's a retired biology prof. Spent her career teaching people, spreading knowledge. Good, noble people here. She was volunteering as a docent, whatever the hell that is, at the Museum of Earth when she was confronted by a group of 7 or 8 people. Notice how they're a little mob there. Creationists eager to challenge the museum exhibits on evolution. They peppered Dr. Durkee with questions about everything from techniques for dating fossils to the second law of thermodynamics. Their queries coming so thick and fast, she found it hard to reply. After about 45 minutes, I told them I needed to take a break. She recalled, my mouth was dry. That encounter and others like it provided the impetus for a training session here in August. Dr. Durkee and scores of other volunteers and staff members from the museums and elsewhere crowded into a meeting room to hear advice from the museum director, Warren D. Almon, on ways to deal with visitors who reject settled precepts of science on religious grounds. Well, the way I would deal with it is say, please get the fuck out of the museum, you psycho. But I guess, you know, that's not really allowed. Maybe I could work it so that we could do security at these evolutionary museums. That'd be great. Similar efforts are underway or planned around the country as science museums and other institutions struggle to contend with challenges to the theory of evolution they say are growing common and sometimes aggressive. Of course they're aggressive. They're mudhutters. They believe they're indoctrinated by God and you're like all infected with Satan, you know, so they'll kill you. That's like all in their Bible and stuff. One company called BC Tours, because we are biblically correct, even offers escorted visits to the Denver Museum of Science and Nature. Participants hear creationist explanations for the exhibitions. Well, isn't that fantastic? So you can go to the museum and you can be lied to all at the same time, thereby making, you know, any kind of like science completely moot. I cannot fucking believe that these creationists are like this. To me, is like mind-numbingly like just bizarre that these people will buy this shit. I can't fucking fathom it. I guess it's got a lot to do with ego. You know, there's got to be a lot of shit here where people just, I never came from a monkey. I guess, okay. So officials like Judy Diamond, our curator of public programs at the University of Nebraska State Museum in Lincoln, are trying to meet such challenges head on. Dr. Diamond is working on evolution exhibitions financed by the National Science Foundation that will go on long-term display at 6 museums of natural history from Minnesota to Texas. The program includes training for docents and staff members. The goal is to understand the controversies so that people are better able to handle them as they come up, she said. Museums, as a field, have recognized we need to take a more proactive role in evolving education. Well, a more proactive role in evolution education. Well, you know, I'm here to tell you, if you go to a museum, okay, you're there and you ask a question, all right, and you're like, hey, you know, I'm a little curious about this. I don't understand this. The museum curator shouldn't have to fucking educate you. What the museum curator should go, no problem, buddy. Let's walk over to this little computer terminal here. Tack, 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 tack. Here's a list of ISBN numbers that you can go to any public library, check these books out, do all your references, and you get to do the legwork to prove yourself wrong. Look at that. Because you know what? All you're going to wind up with is devil's advocate social manipulation, where these mudhut psychos are going to be in there talking about, oh, well, you know, carbon dating's all wrong, and the planet's only 25 years old, you know, and we all got made out of mud. Yeah, yeah, I don't think so. Doesn't really work that way. I'd sooner believe I came from a monkey than from mud. Thanks so much. And incidentally, I'd rather believe I came from a monkey than some dude's rib. And let's just pretend for a moment the Bible's true. Let's just go on that fucking small iota for just a second here. Now, the problem is I used to argue religious theology. I don't do it anymore because I started to win. And a lot of people might think that's funny, but it's really not. There's nothing more upsetting than shattering somebody's psyche, okay? It's like, you know, they come up and they have their little belief structure and they're all fucking good to go. And, you know, you take them apart piece by piece, brick by brick, and you totally destroy them. And you show them quite clearly. And with a laptop, let me tell you, with a laptop and an internet connection, it's really easy to deconstruct religion. Okay, but when you're done, the poor bastard sitting there, or the woman, whatever the case may be sitting there, you know, totally beside herself, and she's got nothing. So what do you replace that with? You just go in there, kick over their sandcastle, and leave them crying in the dirt? That's not fucking cool. That's not cool. You can't do that. That's not nice. That's not nice. So, you know, I don't do that anymore. Now, but let's pretend for just a second here that we are, in fact, the Bible is correct. Because it's either correct or it's not correct. It's either literal or it's not. So I'm assuming, okay, a huge assumption here, that the creationists must believe it to be literal. Because, well, if they don't, then they're just saying, well, it's metaphorical. And once you say it's metaphorical, it turns into a serious semantic thing, and I'm not going to argue semantics with a bunch of assholes who can't even consider what they consider to be true or not true in the Bible. But that said, we will go on. I'm going to go off here a little bit on this one, because this one's really fucking pissing me off. First of all, okay, you got this whole thing where Adam and Eve had, you know, got together, right? They're the first people and all the rest of it. And then they had kids, right? That was the whole deal there. Well, you know, what about the kids? Did they fuck each other? Did they fuck other people? Where did the other people come from? That's number one, right off the top. Now, there's a couple passages in the Bible that said, oh, God made other people, too. Well, what about them? I mean, just because God made Adam, what about the other dude? If God goes, oh, okay, I'll make some people for Adam's kids to have sex with. Well, you know, they never sinned against God. They never ate no apples or nothing in no garden. And incidentally, what is that all about? You know, God didn't want us to have knowledge of good and evil. Well, so what? That means we're like computers, right? We don't have any knowledge of right and wrong. We don't have any knowledge of no judgment. Is that what it is? We have no judgment. We have no free will. Fuck that. I happen to be a big fan of free will. I happen to think free will is a really good idea. Now, we go on from there, and, you know, there's all kinds of serious terrorist activity. You know, the Jews in Egypt. Moses shows up to the Pharaoh. Hey, Pharaoh, why don't you let my Jews go? And Pharaoh says, eat a dick, Moses. And so Moses goes, fine, how about I rain fire, put plagues of frogs, and kill all the kids? Oh, fuck yeah, look at that, you let the people go. You see what I mean? Now, if that's not a terrorist act, I have no idea what is. I mean, you tell me, all right? And it goes further on from there. I mean, the entire Leviticus books are fucking completely asinine. I don't know. You know, gay people need to be murdered? Whoa! You know, hang on now. Just because they're gay doesn't mean that they gotta die. But according to the Bible, they do. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on and on. Now, of course, because the leader of the United States, George Bush, the captain of that particular team, happens to be crazier than a shithouse rat, happens to believe in the rapture. And for those of you who don't really know what the rapture is, these mudhut psychopaths actually believe that what will happen is they will all disappear transporter style and get whisked away to heaven because they're so fucking special before, you know, Jesus comes down and lays a smackdown on all us shit pumps down here. That's sort of the plan. Now, this is what George Bush believes. Okay, now, actually, to be fair, there's two kinds of school of thought on the rapture. The rapture is the God smackdown. Okay, rapture on pay-per-view. Okay, now, there's two kinds of folks regarding that, because I talk about rapture a lot, because it's funny. There's the pre-trib, which means that pre-tribulations, which means that all the good Christian folks fuck off and do the funky teleport before God comes down and beats all our asses. And there's the post-trib, which believe that God will come down and smoke everybody's ass just for shits and giggles and then resurrect the good people. Which, I don't know, I'd like to make sure that we got some good legal doctrine on that, because that doesn't sound like a very good deal to be a Christian. Let me get this straight. I'm going to be a Christian my whole life, never get laid, you know, never watch any good movies, never listen to any good music, and for my troubles, you're going to murder me on the hopes that you might remember to resurrect my ass down the road. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Moving right along, not to hack on the Bible and Christians, you know, too much, but also in Mud Hut news, sent in by Dead Code, Nigerian Islamic judges, God save us all from Nigerian Islamic judges, have ordered that a teenager from, I guess, Niger, have his hand cut off after he confessed to stealing a motorbike, court officials said on Monday. Steals the motorbike, cut his fucking hand off. This ought to be the first time that a foreign national has been sentenced to amputation since northern Nigeria began to reintroduce Sharia, the strict Islamic code, in 1999. Well, that's great. That's the same Islamic code that Canada said, no, and the rest of the free world went, no, when Canada was going to try to bring that shit in. Lawal Usman, who's 19 years old from the Niger district of Maradi, was convicted under Sharia law in the northern city of Katsina on Friday, court register Nasir Dama said. A presiding judge at the Katsina Upper Sharia Court 3, Mustafa Sani Salwa, ruled that Usman should have his right hand amputated at the wrist. The convict has 30 days to appeal the sentence. Fuck that. The convict has 30 days to get the fuck out of there. I would be escaping big time. It does not matter whether the offense was committed. Since he was arrested, he is liable. So the dude didn't even get away with it. Many thousands of villagers have fled the Maradi region for nearby Nigeria following 4 years of drought, famine, and locust swarms. And now they've got crazy judges. Usman was charged on August 23rd, 2005, after Nigerian police stopped him during a routine traffic check and found that he could not produce ownership documents for his motorbike. During interrogation, Usman told the police he stole the bike from his village. The implementation of Islamic law, mainly Muslim northern Nigeria, and in particular use of amputation, has been criticized by Nigeria's federal governments and human rights activists. And that was from the Associated Free Press. Now, the point here is that Sharia law says it's okay to cut people's hands off for stealing. Okay, now, I'm not against corporal punishment. I'm, you know, if you take the kid off the bike, yeah, fucking kid, smack. Give him a smack inside the head. Give him a taser ride, a couple cycles, maybe a caning or something like that. Nothing that's going to maim the guy for the rest of his fucking life. You take his hand off, you've destroyed a worker. You know what I'm saying? Like, why would you do that? What's the plus here? Where's the upswing? You know, I mean, he's not going to forget getting caned. He's not going to forget a taser ride. You know, why the hell you got to cut his fucking hand off? But this is what happens when you start letting Mudhut philosophy dictate, you know, legal proceedings and government. It's crazy. Now then, into some water world news down in New Orleans from White Ops. Hundreds of tons of British food aid shipped to America for starving Hurricane Katrina survivors is going to get burned. So food for the Hurricane Katrina people is being burned. U.S. red tape is stopping it from reaching hungry evacuees. Instead of tons of the badly needed NATO ration packs, these are essentially the exact same things I ate in patrolling. These things are good for like 15 fucking years. Well, they say they're only good for 5, but I'm here to tell you, everybody has eaten them when they're past the due date. It's disgusting how long these things are good for. These same NATO ration packs are eaten by British troops in Iraq, but they've been condemned as unfit for human consumption. So that either means that what? They're condemned because you can't... What's the red tape here? You're feeding them to people. It's food. It's readily accessible, heavy-calorie food. Get it to the people. And unless the bureaucratic mess is cleared up, it could be sent for incineration. One British worker last night called the move sickeningly senseless and said furious colleagues were spitting blood. The food, which costs British taxpayers millions, is sitting idle in a huge warehouse after the Food and Drug Agency recalled it when it already left to be distributed. Scores of lorries headed back to a warehouse in Little Rock, Arkansas to dump it at an FDA incineration plant. The Ministry of Defense in London said last night 400,000 operational ration packs had been shipped to the United States. 400,000 meals. Okay, now I have long since wondered, because I have seen food when I was in being thrown away. They throw these IMP bags and MREs out. They throw them out, and it makes me weep when I see all this food being thrown away. First of all, because I would like to have it for my house so that I could have 400,000. How 400,000 meals? 3 meals a day, 3 goes into 400,000. I wonder how many days I'd be good for like that. Like, I'd never have to shop again. But officials blamed the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which impounded the shipment under regulations that relating to the import and export of meat. Okay, so, you know, we got some red tape going on here. Do we think that it's all, you know, having to do with Mad Cow or what? The aid worker, who would not be named, said, "This is the most appalling act of sickening senseless while people starve." So it's like, well, it could kill them when they're older. Yeah, but they're going to die of starvation now. The FDA has recalled aid from Britain because it has been condemned as unfit for human consumption, despite the fact that these are NATO-approved rations of exactly the same type fed to British soldiers in Iraq. Under NATO, American soldiers are also entitled to eat such rations, yet the starving of the American South will seem to see them go up in smoke because the FDA red tape madness. So a lot of really pissed off Brits going on there. And I can't really say as I blame them too much. I mean, because there's a lot of fucking, like, I can't believe that they're going to just destroy the food. It's food. It's packaged food. It's not rotten food. They're just like, well, we're not too sure and it doesn't meet our standards for meat and blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, people starve. Well done, you. This is yet another step in this disgusting display of how they handled Hurricane Katrina. It's really sickening to me. Now, we've had a loss, and I'd like to pay a bit of a tribute to a real wog, you know, a real badass, actually. I'm going to go out and call this guy a super wog badass, and I'm talking about none other than Simon Wiesenthal. This was sent to me by Pig Monkey. Holocaust survivor and famous Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal, founder of the center that bears his name, passed away September 20th, 2005, at his home in Vienna, Austria. He was 96 years old. Wow, did he ever kick Hitler's ass. Wiesenthal was born on December 31, 1908, in Buchach. Buchach. Buchach? I'm so embarrassed that I don't know how to say that name. The part of Austria-Hungary and studied in Prague. He settled in Poland and was forced to work in a factory after the Soviet Union had invaded Poland following the Hitler-Stalin Pact. When the Germans then turned on the Soviet Union in 1941, so this guy, okay, he started, okay, by being into a forced labor camp under Stalin. Then when the Germans turned on the Soviet Union in 41, Wiesenthal was caught and interned in not one, but several different concentration camps. Wow. He was liberated when American forces reached the Mauthausen concentration camp on May 1945. So he's had a pretty shitty goal. Wiesenthal devoted his entire post-World War II life to tracking down and pursuing Nazi war criminals. In 1947, he and 30 colleagues founded the Jewish Documentation Center in Linz, Austria, where he was devoted to collecting information on the whereabouts of war criminals and the documentation of their crimes. But the brewing Cold War called the U.S. and Soviet Union to quickly lose interest in the prosecution of Nazis. Wiesenthal closed the Linz Center in 1954, but gained new hope with the capture of Adolf Eichmann, whom he helped track down. Possibly the biggest success and capture was the trial of Franz Stangl, commandant at the Treblinka extermination camp. In total, he and the Simon Wiesenthal Center he set up in the U.S. in 1997 is thought to have brought some 1,100 war criminals to justice, but he failed to capture Gestapo chief Heinrich Müller and Auschwitz doctor Joseph Mengele and the blue-eyed angel of death, who was, in fact, a disgusting piece of shit. And for the $50,000 bonus question, if you were to find a tie-in, what Joseph Mengele lived under an assumed name. They know what happened to him. He lived in Argentina. But he lived under the assumed name of Helmut Gregor. And this one you're going to have to reach for, but hardcore fans of my stuff will recognize the name Helmut Gregor, and that's because it is, in fact, the assumed name of Joseph Mengele. Wiesenthal's life was not without controversy. Austrian Chancellor Bruno Kreutzle, himself a Jew, accused Wiesenthal of being part of a certain mafia seeking to besmirch Austria and claiming Wiesenthal collaborated with the Nazis to survive. Pretty heavy claims. On the other hand, Wiesenthal refused to condemn Kurt Waldheim, former UN Secretary General and Austrian President, for being an officer of the German army during World War II, something which alienated him from the American Jewish groups. So, you know, be that as it may, I mean, everybody gets mud thrown at them. And it's, you know, as you grow, as you get a little bit older in life, you begin to realize that not everything is quite as cut and dry as you thought it was. Now, when you get bad guys like the Nazis, I mean, realistically, the Nazis, holy shit. I mean, these guys were the perfect bad guys. They worshipped the devil. They wore black. They had little skulls and crosses. They're perfect bad guys. You couldn't come up with a better bad guy than a Nazi. You know, anytime there's bad shit going on, it's always the Nazis. But, you know, there's a lot of advancements, and this is something nobody talks about, that Grey's Anatomy was a lot of it was taken from Nazi death camps. They advanced medicine by 30 years. They did this by murdering millions of people. But, you know, that's what they're all about. And that's why fascism is generally kind of a bad idea. Kind of something to avoid. But no one talks about, you know, Nazis that much anymore, which I think is kind of sad. I think it's World War II and the Nazis and Nazi history and how that whole thing happened needs to be studied. Because, of course, when you look at it from, there's a bunch of different ways you can look at this. From a technical standpoint, the Nazis were super advanced. Like, these guys were talking about the bomb. They were this far away from having nuclear weapons. They had jets. They had it all. And they were also killing millions of people to get it. They were also stuffing pillows with people's hair. They had an entire industry of making byproducts out of people. Very sick, very weird. They were pumping their armies full of drugs. National symbol of the eagle. And George Bush's father, senior, of course, not George Jr., I mean King George I there. His father was heavily involved with the Nazis. And we brought over all the Nazis in Operation Paperclip. You should do some history into what the actual history of the Nazis in the United States is. You'll find some rather disturbing similarities. Now, in Frankenfood news, this was sent to me by Thunderspud. An author on a mission to expose the dangers of genetically modified food has arrived in South Africa with tales of corporate espionage and biotech bullies. Very shades of Constant Gardner in this story. There was no deception in the United States about genetically modified food. I would not be here. If there was no deception in the United States about genetically modified food, I would not be here. Jeffrey Smith said on Saturday. the best-selling writer who is on the forefront of the fight against GM Foods, with his international expose, Seeds of Deception, is touring the African continent raising awareness of the dangers of GM Foods. This guy's going to get himself killed. Smith is the founding director of the U.S.-based Institute for Responsible Technology. It took a lecture on harmful effects of GM foods 10 years to stir him. It took a lecture on harmful effects of GM foods 10 years to stir him to educate people on issues of genetically modified organisms, a topic immersed in technical jargon with ultimately little concern for the consumer who is most affected. Smith worked within the industry for a laboratory involved in GMO detection and wrote his book after he left the industry. The work reads like a thriller, with stories of how international biotech corporations bribed officials and even threatened scientists who exposed the harmful effects of GM foods. Again, very much shades of the Constant Gardener. He has also documented how evidence proving the unpredictable dangers, side effects, and byproducts of GM foods was stolen. Even research documents were fudged with crucial chunks of data which would hinder or prevent the approval of GM foods, where all the data that did that was omitted. There is a little debate about genetic modification in South Africa, where GM products include about 10% of maize, 30% of soya, and up to 80% of cotton. Consumers are unaware of the ultimate dangers of splicing genes of one species and inserting them into another. It is in this naive context, said Smith, that companies like the giant multinational Monsanto, primarily responsible for pushing GM foods globally, are targeting developing nations. Kill the poor. Countries like South Africa are seen as large points for the developing world. Countries like South Africa are seen as launch points for the developing world. South Africa appears to be hijacked in much the same way the U.S. regulatory agencies have been hijacked. Smith has documented cases of blatant industry collusion and exposed the enormous food safety risks which has come as a result of corrupt methods of approving genetically modified foods. Very, very interesting stuff. It'd be interesting to see what's going to happen to this guy. And, a lot of people look at these guys and call them kooks. They call them nuts. You know, they say, oh, I don't know why these guys are so paranoid. What's he so paranoid about? I don't know what his problem is. Well, I'm kind of curious. I don't know why he does it. Like, what would be his motive for traveling around Africa? Oh, he's trying to sell his book. Well, yeah, I guess. But, you'd think he'd be able to find a better trick to do rather than taking on, you know, these massive multinational corporations that have a history of killing people. You know, sort of an idea. Now, on to some good cop, bad cop news from the Caps Locker. Unfortunately, I have another bad cop story. Fuck. A veteran New Jersey state trooper has been indicted for allegedly aiding members of a major Union County drug ring, law enforcement officials said Monday. Detective Sergeant Moise Hernandez, 39, of Union Township, a trooper for 17 years, turned himself into authorities Monday. He is charged with second-degree conspiracy. Weird, I didn't know there was degrees of conspiracy. And official misconduct, as well as fourth-degree charge of falsifying documents related to the heroin trafficking scheme. The Union County Prosecutor's Office says Hernandez used confidential motor vehicle information to identify undercover surveillance car for one of the alleged dealers, then filed a fictitious report to try to cover his actions. Hernandez has been suspended without pay since June and is expected to be arraigned within a week, said Robert O'Leary, spokesman for the Union County Prosecutor's Office. The trooper was in Union County jail pending bail of $150,000. Attempts to contact Hernandez and his attorney Thursday were not successful. 20 other defendants arrested April 14th during raids on 23 locations in northeastern New Jersey were indicted on racketeering and conspiracy charges, authorities announced on Monday. The ring brought 6 kilograms, 13.2 pounds, of high-grade heroin into the region daily. Drugs were transported from Cali, Columbia, to Newark, Union, Essex, and Middlesex Middlesex County. Camden and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania prosecutors said. The original investigation began in 2001 with a single street source at a Kenilworth and a Kenilworth detective, eventually growing into a probe involving 220 federal, state, and municipal law enforcement officers. Very brutal stuff, but at least they're getting the heroin off the streets. Now, in super villain news, it seems that there's a brand new legion of supervillains being created. Six major Hollywood studios have formed a joint venture to protect their movies from the threat of electronic theft. Yes, the looming threat of electronic theft. Not copying, not sharing, but theft. Where they'll lose their movies. No, they don't actually lose their movies. We just watch their movies and then tell other people about them by using media. But anyway, that's okay. Motion Picture Laboratories will research and create new technologies to stop the unauthorized distribution of films, particularly via the internet. Notice how the word sharing is not used. Unauthorized distribution. So far we got theft and unauthorized distribution. The company, also named Movie Labs, will have offices in Los Angeles and a $30 million budget for the first 2 years. The studios pooling their researchers are Walt Disney, Sony, Paramount, Warner Brothers, Universal, and 20th Century Fox. Holy Legion of Doom. Your friend and mine, Dan G. Lickman, president of the Motion Picture Association of America, called the venture a smart investment. But this is a man who has no idea how to calculate value, so there you go. He said the nonprofit company, oh, it's nonprofit! Oh, that's good. Would help the entertainment industry adopt a new means of fighting piracy and protecting copyrights. There are thousands of new concepts floating around the high-tech community on how to develop tools to fight piracy, said G. Lickman. Researching developing these technologies will now help save the major studios and other motion picture producers from distributing. Researching and developing these technologies will now help save the major studios and other motion picture producers and distributors money in the future. You're not saving anybody money, you fucking moron. Planned projects include devising ways to jam camcorders being used to record movies in cinemas illegally and developing methods of detecting illegal content sharing on peer-to-peer networks. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, he actually did say sharing. Illegal content sharing. You should work harder on that. You didn't get rid of the word sharing in there. The movie studios estimate. The studios say they lose as much as $3.5 billion a year due to the illegal copying of films. They lose $3.5 billion a year, according to Mr. Dan G. Lickman here. Maybe that's Glickman. But, you know, I just, how can you possibly come up with a figure like that? I mean, that's insane. That's totally nuts. But anyway, you know, that's what they're doing. They got their little Movie Labs Legion of Doom there. Now, in smut news, now a while ago, I reported on how the head of the FBI was apparently, his major focus isn't on terrorism. It isn't even on Homeland Security. No, no, no. What's he focusing on? He's focusing on smut. Now, to follow up on that, in smut news, the FBI is joining the Bush administration's war on porn, and it's looking for a few good agents. Early last month, the Bureau's Washington field office began recruiting for a new anti-obscenity squad. According to the job posting, was a July 29th electronic communication from FBI headquarters to all 56 field offices, describing the initiative as one of the top priorities of the Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, and by extension, the director, that would be the FBI's director, Robert S. Mueller III. Mischievous commentary began propagating around the water coolers at 601 4th Street and its satellites, where the FBI's second largest field office concentrates on national security, high technology, and public corruption, which are, you know, kind of bigger deals than porn. The new squad will divert 8 agents, a supervisor, and assorted support staff to gather evidence against manufacturers and purveyors of pornography. Not the kind exploiting children, but the kind that depicts and is marketed to consenting adults. I guess this means we've won the war on terror, said one exasperated FBI agent, speaking on the condition of anonymity because poking fun at headquarters is not regarded as career enhancing. We must not need any more resources for espionage. Federal obscenity prosecutions, which have been out of style since Attorney General Edwin Meese III and Reagan administration made pornography a signature issue in the 80s, do encounter many legal issues, including First Amendment claims, the FBI headquarters memo noted. Applicants for the porn squad should therefore have a stomach for the kind of material that tends to be most offensive to local juries. Community standards, along with prurient purpose and absences of artistic merit, define criminal obscenity under the current Supreme Court doctrine. So, you know, because they're looking for this, and aren't they actually committing a crime, though? I mean, if you're going to be going so far as to call all this stuff a crime, they're hunting it, and it's all they have to do is look at it in order to commit a crime, then they've committed crimes. I don't know. You know, don't get me wrong. When I look around on the web, and believe you me, we've all seen it. We all know it's out there. We all know you got that really twisted shit floating around on the web. Yeah, they're all consulting adults. Okay, yeah, they're all consenting adults. But there's something just morally wrong with shitting in somebody's mouth. Okay, that's wrong, you know? And if I'm the only one who stands up and says, you know, it's wrong, then, you know, I guess I'm the only guy who stands up and says it's wrong. Then I don't really give a fuck what anyone says. But for me, that's fucking wrong. And I don't think the person... either person involved there, maybe the person taking the shit isn't so bad, but definitely the person getting shit in the mouth, that's really, you know, you've got issues, dude. Now, in Target shooting news sent in to me by Healthy Fire, now this is one of these kind of things that really gets my ire up, and I'm probably going to piss a few people off with this story, but hey, why not? I'm on a roll. A new book published by Haworth Press. Now, Haworth Press makes a lot of medical texts, okay? Features multiple PhD, quote-unquote, experts. So we got a lot of doctors claiming that sex with children can benefit boys and even serve a mentoring function. This is what this book says. The same-sex desire and love in Greco-Roman antiquity and in the classical tradition of the West, which is the name of the book, features scholarly treatises by a raft of mostly PhD academics, all praising earlier civilizations, particularly Greece and Rome, for the role homosexuality played in these ancient cultures. Well, this has nothing to do with homosexuality. Okay, there was very little lambdas. There's a lot of homosexuality going in these ancient cultures. Not a big deal. In the chapter titled "Pederasty and Integration of Cross-Cultural, Cross-Species, and Empirical Data," Bruce Rind, PhD, lauds the rampant child molestation that reportedly occurred in these societies, at one point citing evolution as supporting a pro-pedophilia worldview. From his book, this guy, this is a quote from the book, pederasty, or sexual relations between men and adolescent boys, is condemned in our society as an unqualified evil that maims and destroys. In ancient Greece, samurai Japan, and numerous other cultures, pederasty was seen as the noblest of human relations, conductive if not essential to nurturing the adolescent's successful intellectual and physical maturation. This guy's a fucking doctor. Current psychological and psychiatric theorizing have pronounced and promoted the former view while ignoring the vast array of cross-cultural data related to the latter view, meaning that, you know, modern society seems to think that fucking kids is bad, where clearly in the past it shows that fucking children is good. Mental health opinion has also been ignored, and a wealth of cross-species data with important parallels. Instead, this opinion is based on feminist models of rape and incest, which are backed up by clinical research on child sexual abuse. The current article examines empirical rather than clinical data on pederasty and supplements this with cross-cultural and cross-species perspectives. The empirical data shows that pederasty is not only predestined to injure, seeing that, you know, nailing young boys in the ass won't injure them, but can benefit the adolescent when practiced according to the ancient Greek form. Okay, cross-cultural and cross-species data, whatever the hell that means, cross-species, shows the extensiveness of pederasty in the natural world, as well as its functional rather than pathological nature in the societies and species. An evolutionary model that synthesizes the empirical cross-cultural cross-species data is proposed as an alternative to the highly inadequate feminist and psychiatric models. The animal data suggests that the seeds for pederasty were planted at the dawn of humanity. The human data suggests that pederasty is a crime to serve a mentoring function. Ryan brought unfavorable publicity to the American Psychological Association in 1999 when the organization published its official peer-reviewed journal, APA Bulletin, a report disputing the harmfulness of child molestation, titled A Meta-Analytical Examination of Assumed Properties of Child Sexual Abuse Using College Samples. The report by Rind and others claimed, in the report, Rind and others claimed that child sexual abuse could be harmless and beneficial. Okay, now, clearly, you know, let's just take a big step back here. Let's take a big step back. What we got here is we got a bunch of doctors, okay, and a bunch of guys who have come forward and they said, yeah, we don't think that it's a big deal to nail little kids in the ass. You know, we don't think that's a problem. We don't think that pedophilia is a really bad thing if it's done correctly. And, yeah, you know, and they're doctors. I mean, these are people who've gone to school and stuff, you know? So, at some point, though, you're gonna have to stand up for your convictions. At some point, you're gonna say, I don't give a fuck what you say. You're not having sex with little boys. That's just not gonna happen. All right? And they'll say, but why? And my answer to that is, because if you do, I'll kill you. And that's how that works. Sorry, but it's unacceptable by North American standards. I don't give a fuck how they did in Japan. I don't give a fuck how they did in ancient Greece. If you touch little kids on my watch, you get fucking shot. That's how that works. Now then, moving on to the Daily Hack. Pemmican from Mythos. This is a really cool Daily Hack. Hey, Sean, you most likely know about pemmican as a survival food, but here's an interesting website where it explains the history on pemmican and a few recipes on how to make it. Very, very cool and highly recommended for all you wogs out there. And as well, an AlertNet Daily Hack sent to me by Rogue Trooper. Very, very cool. Reuters AlertNet is a humanitarian news network based around a popular website. It aims to keep relief professionals and the wider public up to date on humanitarian crises around the globe. Very cool website. Make sure you seriously check that out. Wow, my mouth is seriously burning out. That last story with these doctors claiming that pedophilia is cool is just, wow, it's really fucking with me. But anyway, that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 66 people for the month of August in 2005. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's NEWSREAL at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up disc one of This Is Neo Goth. Very, very cool compilation. I'm going to play all three discs over the next shows. I'm going to leave you now with a track by X Fusion for all you wonderful creationists out there called Jesus Hates You. So until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.
Hast du schon mal einem Chinesen den Kopf abgeschnitten? Sie bluten nicht. Nicht so wie wir.